From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Philippe Jalli, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Emily Tamkin, Foreign Affairs Reporter at BuzzFeed News. Our moderator is CBS Radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. The United States midterm elections will be held in just a few days, and the stakes could not be higher, as control of the Congress and key state houses are decided, as well as the agenda and quite possibly the survival of the Trump presidency. We take a look at the key races and the issues that will decide them. The U.S. suffered a week of violence with an arrest of a bomber and the worst anti-Semitic attack in its history. And we discuss the ramifications of the elections in Brazil and Germany as Jair Bolsonaro steps in and Angela Merkel steps aside. Always a challenge to broach these issues in such a short period of time. So glad we have such talented guests who are able to do that. Let's start with the midterm elections. Control of the House of Representatives, key seats in the Senate, governor's races. So many races to take a look at. But before we take it races, let's take a look at the issues that are out there. I'm going to start with you, Emily, with the Republican issues that are at stake. There are a lot of successes for the Republican Party, arguably, to campaign on. A booming economy, et cetera. But it seems as though mostly there's a negative slant to the Republican campaign tenor. Talk about the issues that are fueling Republican candidates.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, instead of focusing on what could be perceived by Republicans as domestic successes, Republican candidates have really focused on immigration and on sort of threats of violence that they say could ensue should Democrats win, right? They have this jobs, not mobs platform. I was in the car and an ad for Corey Stewart of Virginia came on, and it was very, you know, if the Democrats win, violence will break out, and Tim Kaine supports it. It was not about healthcare or the economy or sort of what you would think of as bread and butter domestic issues. I would think, I'm not a domestic political reporter, but I would think that this starts at the top. Right. So President Trump has really made immigration, and he has said, you know, we're nationalists, we have to call it that, that he's made that his platform for the midterms. And I think that a variety of Republican candidates are following suit.
And Philippe, when we talk about President Trump, Emily says that President Trump has set the tone with immigration. It seems to me that although we have a lot of local elections, as congressional elections have traditionally been, they seem to be all national elections now, and all focused on one issue, which is President Donald Trump and his positions on immigration and the fear of the other.
That's the bet the president has made, to nationalize these elections, to be everywhere, to occupy the ground, every ground, by the way, as a president, but also as a candidate. He's really replaying the playbook of 2016, I think, the same type of crisscrossing the country and having like 11 big rallies in the last 6 days across 8 states, pounding the same message. We have to acknowledge that immigration has played well for him so far. I mean, that was the first topic of his first speech when he declared his candidacy in 2015. He played the same arguments in 2016 and won. And now he has this so-called caravan marching through Mexico, still like 1,000 miles away from the American...
From the southern border, the United States.
The southern border. But providing images that are clearly used in a propaganda fashion.
Is there some, I'll say this, is there some danger, Emily, to using this? He has doubled down on this message by going from saying 5,000 troops to 15,000 troops, by saying that he is going to overturn by executive order birthright citizenship, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, declaring new policies on asylum seekers in a recent speech. Are these things, according to the polls, are they helping or hurting Republican candidates across the board?
Okay. Will the fact that he is, let's just say that he's lying about how many people are marching through, or that he can change the Constitution by executive order, which he cannot? No, they don't seem to hurt him in the American popular consciousness. I will say that while I don't think that the blue wave is going to be quite as decisive as some thought earlier on, I think the risk, right, is that the people to whom this issue speaks, those are already Republican voters, right? I don't know who comes out to vote for this message who isn't already coming out to vote Republican. I think that's why the Democrats are really trying to focus on health care and not immigration, right? To say that the Republicans are going to take your health care. You need to have this blue wave come crashing down onto the beach of Congress, right, to protect your health care. That, I think, they have decided is an issue that could get independent voters or non-voters, right, to the polls.
And I want to stay with you for a second because I read in The Economist this week a very interesting piece, and the premise of the piece was that there is no issue that unites Democrats the way that race unites Republicans. So if the premise is that the Republicans have one issue and that issue is somewhat sketchy and maybe driving people away, why aren't the Democrats doing better? What is the uniting, unifying issue that is going to bring Democratic voters out to the polls other than opposition of the president?
That is a great question, and it's one that I think the Democrats are still answering for themselves. I think there's something of a split, not a split, but there's a spectrum in the Democratic Party right now on how to counter Trump and not just counter Trump, but how to push their own agenda.
How to govern.
How to govern. How far left of a party do they want this to be? You have newer candidates who are quite far left, including in foreign policy. Ocasio-Cortez from New York is the one who immediately comes to mind. But there are others, right, who are sort of saying we want health care for all and we do not support wars abroad. It's like traditional leftist positions, right? And then you have the sort of more traditional Democrats. So if they haven't come up with one issue or one platform or one, this is what it means to be a Democrat right now, I think it's because there isn't one way to be a Democrat right now. I would also say that I just want to point out the irony of Republicans talking about identity politics and Democrats being obsessed with identity politics when immigration and race, as you say, is a defining uniting issue for Trump's Republican Party.
Very good point. Philippe, historically, the party that holds the White House loses their majority in the midterms. We know that. And polling seems to suggest that that's what's going to happen. As Emily suggests, the size of the wave, we don't know whether it's going to be a ripple or a wave. But there is evidence that there will be a change in the leadership. But given the quote-unquote momentum that had been gained by the Republicans because of the Brett Kavanaugh issue and things like that, is there a path for the Republicans to hold the Congress?
Well, the president seems to believe that. And I think he's betting on his energy, his divisive but also mobilizing attitude that is perceived by his base. I mean, as you have to save me, you have to go to the polls to block those Democrats who are obstructionist, open borders, destroying the economy. You will lose your retirement accounts. I mean, there has been a lot of description of chaos, of the chaos that would await the country if he loses. I think the path is very narrow. But it was already also a very narrow path in 2016. I would say if the president wins, I mean, managed to keep his majority in both chambers of the Congress this time, he will be the great, the great magician, political magician of the 21st century.
Maybe the greatest upset that we've seen in modern political U.S. political history.
The assumption right now is that Republicans will probably lose the House and may keep the Senate. They might even increase their majority in the Senate. I don't trust the polls anymore. I think the polls cannot even follow suit to the change of themes. I haven't seen one poll, for instance, on the birth, on the 14th Amendment issue so far. So it goes too fast for them to follow. And so I think I really look at this midterm elections as the first credible poll or referendum on the kind of support this president has in the country.
Emily, I want to talk a little bit about the events of last week. I think after last week's show aired, we had the arrest of an alleged pipe bomber who was sent, I believe, 14 total bombs to targets that were supporters of the Democratic Party and critics of the Trump administration. And we also had a horrific tragedy, the shooting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the United States, where a gunman went into a synagogue and murdered, I believe, 11 people. We don't have enough time even to talk about the tragedy of it, and our hearts go out to the victims of this. But the effect of it on the election, talk a little bit about what these two events mean to voters and how it will shift their opinion on which lever they pull in the voting booth.
I don't know that the events of last weekend, which again were tragic, will change how people vote. I would say that I think it forces into very harsh light some of the rhetoric that is used in this country. And I don't mean to say that anyone but the shooter or the man who allegedly sent the pipe bombs are responsible for their actions, of course. You don't need to squint to see a line between that and elected officials talking about how we need to stop globalists and we need to stop refugees and some really loaded language that I think many Jewish people clearly, which I am one, clearly recognize as being anti-Semitic. And I would hope that the events of last weekend cause voters and citizens to reflect on the language that we allow or support our leaders using in this country.
Philippe, your perspective?
Yes, I think it's exposed this president as being utterly incapable and unwilling to console the nation after a national tragedy. We all saw that he was eager to turn the page, to get back to the campaign trail, and his very divisive electoral rhetoric. This evidence, I don't know if it will change the mind of, not of his supporters, I guess, but some people in the middle. So some people who would long for a president who is able to unify the country in tragic times. He recently called those two events plots in an interview to Axios. It's plots that have stopped the momentum of the electoral momentum of the Republicans. Is that what it is about? I think there are people in this country who are tired of the divisiveness pushed from the top, from the office of the President of the United States. And for that to happen 10 days before the election, I think it's exactly why Donald Trump wanted to turn the page and go back to the campaign trail and immigration and the caravan.
We'll have to take a break right there. We'll be back with more issues in just a moment.
Here's a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News on the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. You can find our other programs there as well, Encounter and Press Conference USA. Also, check us out on Facebook, and while you're there, leave a comment or two. And like us, Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Philippe Gelly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Emily Tamkin, Foreign Affairs Reporter at BuzzFeed News. Our moderator is Michael Williams, CBS Radio Contributor.
Welcome back. I want to get for a couple of moments to a couple of the key races that are being contested. I picked out a couple, and I'm sure that you have a couple of your favorites, too. So I'm just going to mention a couple, then I'll go to each of you and let you either comment on those or choose your own. In Texas, the Senate race pits the incumbent, Senator Ted Cruz, a very well-known senator, and his Democratic opponent, Beto O'Rourke, who is mounting a credible challenge to his Senate seat, to Cruz's Senate seat, in what was remains a very, very Republican, heavily Republican state. In Florida, the Senate race, you have incumbent Senator, sitting Senator Bill Nelson versus sitting Governor Rick Scott. Bill Nelson being the Democrat, Rick Scott being the Republican. And the Georgia governor's race, where Stacey Adams is seeking to become the first African-American governor of that state. Emily, I'll go to you first. Want to comment on any of those, or is there any other race that particularly interests you?
Yeah, I will comment on the Georgia governor's race and then add another Florida race. Oprah is in Georgia campaigning for her candidate. And I would also just say that what's amazing to me about that race is just the open voter suppression that's at play. How that's not, I mean, it is a big story, but how that's not a bigger or more discussed story boggles the mind. this race is so close. Presumably that would not be the case if some incredibly repressive tactics were not being used in Georgia. And I don't think we can talk about the race without mentioning that. And then the other race that I've been following or I'm really interested in is the governor's race in Florida, where Andrew Gillum could become the first black governor of the state. And also, speaking about that sort of Democratic spectrum earlier, He is someone who is pretty far left and who won the primary. And now it looks like maybe could win the governorship in Florida, which went for Trump. Right. So we'll see.
I just want to add to the race that you mentioned in Georgia that Stacey Adams is running against the attorney general. The sitting attorney general in the state of Georgia, who is the person who decides the election rules. So he's essentially getting to just decide the playing field within his own election, something that really raised my eyebrows, and I know it did for you too. Philippe, any particular elections catch your fancy?
Well, the two races you mentioned, I've been to Texas and Georgia to cover them. So I was very impressed by Beto O'Rourke in Texas, although he probably has a very little chance to be elected and to beat Ted Cruz, even if he gets to like 5% behind. That would be in itself a success. There is the fundraising that is mind-blowing, $62 million.
It's almost a huge number, $62
million.
Yeah,
it's almost a presidential campaign.
Exactly.
And he would be probably in a much better shape if he was running for president than the actual chances he has to win in Texas.
Is he running for president?
I mean, if he wins this Senate seat, that would be a huge achievement. Then he would have this dilemma to say just after 2 years, it's kind of betrayal to the people who elects you.
Well, I remember another senator from Illinois who didn't really have a problem with that.
If he loses, I believe, yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. But it was 4 years, I think. If he loses, that would be, I believe, the first time someone would try, in his position, would try to run for president since, the last one was Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Who lost Congress race in 1858 and won the presidency in 1860. So you cannot bet a lot on that. But he's a very interesting candidate. He probably won't disappear after the election. Stacey Abrams also is very impressive. Both of them, I must say, are campaigning on pretty leftist issues like universal health care.
Universal health care, yes.
Yeah, both of them defend that. I mean, and doing that in Texas is quite impressive.
Yeah.
In Texas, you have a reservoir of 900,000 more Republicans at every midterm election. To overrun that, you need to change the mind of, 6 to 10% of the Republicans and increase the turnout of the minorities by 20%. That would be really a miracle.
Yeah, I think that I think Trump won by 11 points over Hillary Clinton.
In Texas, yeah.
In Texas, something like that, by a large margin. So the fact that that Beto O'Rourke is running so far inside that margin is really quite remarkable. It says a lot about him as a candidate.
And Ted Cruz won by 16 points.
By 16 points, yes. In his previous race. Emily, I just want to finish with you on the election thing very quickly. What's at stake for the Trump presidency? If he loses, if the Congress is lost, we have the Democrats with subpoena power. We have Democrats with committee chairmanships. What does the next 2 years hold for that presidency?
A lot of frustration is the short answer. And you saw that in, obviously, they were completely different presidents, but you saw that in Obama's first term, right? That the Republicans took back the Hill and sort of have said that they made stopping Obama and his agenda their first priority. I think you will see the same should Democrats come back into legislative power.
There is one difference, if I may.
Yeah.
I think Obama was no drama Obama. It's not exactly the same with President Trump. So what I expect, even if the Democrats take only the House, is 2 years of constant harassment of the president. And you mentioned the subpoena power. They will get his tax returns. They will protect Robert Mueller investigation. They will dig in everything they can. And there will be a difference. Not only the agenda will be probably blocked, although you still can act with the Senate if you keep the Senate, and you can still appoint people and judges and do these kind of things. If you lose both chambers, the presidency will be paralyzed. If he loses only the House, he will be the subject of constant harassment.
I kind of agree with what you just said. I think that basically legislation will grind to a halt, and we'll probably see record numbers of executive orders coming from the White House and judges aplenty being appointed. In the remaining time, I want to discuss a couple of elections in other parts of the world. You had a presidential election in Brazil where what can be characterized as a far-right candidate, Jair Bolsonaro, won his presidential election. And in Germany, you had Angela Merkel, after elections in one of the regions of Germany, Hesse. She has announced that she is stepping down as head of her party, not as chancellor, but as head of her party. Philippe, let's go with Brazil, this election. Who is Jair Bolsonaro, and why is he so controversial?
Well, he's a former captain of the army who's praised the dictatorship that was taking hold of Brazil from 1964 to 1985. He's a nationalist populist in the hard sense of those words. He has been threatening his opponents. He's been threatening the Supreme Court. Right after his election, he has guaranteed that he would preserve the constitution and democracy in Brazil. But along the campaign, he's waged a very strange campaign, refusing to debate with his opponent. He was stabbed in the stomach back in September. From that point, his polls took off. But also, he took argument of that to shy away from almost any public campaigning. He used the social networks and very provocative statements. In spite of that, I mean, his win is clear and around 56%. He will take power in January. There are a lot of issues we don't know anything about because his platform is full of holes and we don't know what he will do exactly in terms of privatization, in terms of security. He has mentioned that he will give a few key ministries to generals or former generals. The army will have a powerful role in this government. But everybody is looking at what's going on there. It's not the first rightist to be elected lately in Latin America. He got a call from President Trump. He mentioned that he was extremely friendly, that they would cooperate, and also on military issues. I don't know. We'll see what that means.
Exactly. Let's move to Germany with Angela Merkel stepping down. What are the implications for that move in Germany and for Western democracy?
The last time I was here, I told the both of you not to count Merkel out. I am here to eat my words. Merkel has stepped down as head of her party. You were right, and I was wrong. No, but yes, she. So she's stepping down as head of her party. She says that she's staying on as chancellor until 2021, but whether or not she'll be able to do that once there's a new party head, given that those two have been so linked, is unlikely. I'm skeptical that she'll be able to do that.
Correct. Her predecessor tried to and failed.
Yes. You know, I think the center has not held in Germany. It did for a while, for longer than many other Western countries, but it's not. And what kind of fills in the void, whether that's the Green Party or the AfD, if it's far left, if it's far right, if the Social Democrats can somehow find a way to reinvent themselves as a compelling alternative or platform for people to vote for, is to be seen. But it's the end of an era for Merkel.
Totally agree. It is the end of an era. And at some point we'll do the legacy thing, but we won't do that quite yet. That's all the time we have. Thanks to Philippe Gilly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Emily Tamkin, Foreign Affairs Reporter at BuzzFeed News. This program is produced by VOA's Current Affairs. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites, and I'm Michael Williams, CBS Radio contributor. Thanks for listening.